Accession number 28453, Reel 3.
Am I pronouncing your name right? Confino.
Confino.
Confino. Laura Confino, and this is Reel 3. The actual outbreak of war, you know, September the 3rd, where were you then? And I wonder what sort of impact that had on you when war actually did start.
I was in Eastbourne at boarding school, and so my whole initial experience came through school life, the information that we were given, and in fact there was quite a lot of excitement in the school. There's war now and we're going to fight the Germans, and that sort of attitude. And then of course because we were by the coast, we were told we had to be evacuated, and the whole school moved to Betsy Coed, where it was a hotel which was left empty, and we settled in there. And of course war was incredibly remote there. The only time we had anything to do with bombs or anything was, in fact, it was a German plane which had been damaged and had to crash land somewhere near there. That was the only sort of experience we had with war. And otherwise, it was just a beautiful place to live in. And so, because I had nowhere to go during holiday time, I had a very nice music teacher by the name of Hazel Stelly. And she got married and lived in Hadley Wood near Barnet. And she said to me, because we were good friends then, she said to me, look, why don't you come and spend the holidays with us? And I said, wonderful. So I went there during one of the holidays, I can't remember which one it was, and was so happy not to be at boarding school. And so when it was time to go back, I said, oh, you know, I'm not going back to boarding school. And she said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to stay with you. Which was probably quite unexpected to her. But she and her husband, I think, were very fond of me. And they said, okay, we'll have to ask your guardian and see if he gives permission, and if that is all right, then you stay with us. And so that is what happened, and I went to grammar school in Barnet, to Queen Elizabeth's grammar school, and cycled there every day, and felt perfectly happy.
How are you getting on with lessons? You know, obviously you're picking up English by this time.
Oh, yes.
But how about the curriculum? Were you adapting okay to
these?
Oh,
yes. Yes, that wasn't a problem. I mean, I was no scientist. I liked languages and history and that sort of thing. But I had a friend there who helped me with science, and I helped her with English. And the funny thing is, she emigrated to Australia, and she still remembers that I helped her with English, and I still remember that she helped me with science.
How about your guardian? You know, the fact that you went on holidays with your music teacher.
Yes, the guardian was the husband of the aunt who went to Canada. And so he was not legally responsible for me, but he took it upon himself to keep an eye on me, okay? And then when
I was also wondering about the sort of school fees and that. Well, you know, who took care of these?
Oh, that's the family did.
Your own family?
Yes, yes. And I mean, at grammar school there were no fees, and he paid something to for my keep. You know, I don't know exactly how it was done, but there was no problem there. And then when I finished school, my guardian said to me, well, what would you like to do? And I said, actually, you know, I'd like to become a journalist. And he said, well, I might know somebody in Norwich, I think it was, on the paper there, but I think you must learn shorthand and typing. And I said, yeah, what a good idea, but I want to take a crash course. I don't want to do that for a long time. And he said, well, you know, if that's what you want to do, well, I'm going to send you to the best school in London, which is called Mrs. Hostis. Very posh place. So for 6 months, I went to Mrs. Hostis and didn't like typing and didn't like shorthand, but sort of learned the necessary, made good friends there, had all kinds of lovely experiences. And then when I finished there, I had to do German shorthand as well, and so that was considered important for me. So when I finished there, the head called me in and said, well, what shall we do with you, Laura? And I said, well, I don't really know. And she said, well, I think it would be a good idea. I think you're just right for the BBC. And I said, oh, very nice idea. So she said, I'll arrange an appointment for you. So I went to have an appointment. And I remember it was then in Regent's Park. Which college was in Regent's Park now?
There is a college.
Bedford College.
Bedford College. Bedford College. Yes, the ladies' college.
Yes. So I went there, and they said, all right, you come for training. And so then I started work there, first of all in an English department, and then they needed people, because war had obviously, there were the broadcasts to Europe, they needed people to work with languages, and so they transferred me to the German department. And because I must mention that I hadn't spoken German for quite a long time, so I was a little bit rusty, and also my speed was not quite wonderful, because in the newsroom there you had to be very, very quick. So they said to me, well, you know, you'll be just right for the Austrians. And I said, yes, very nice. And that was the nicest thing that ever happened to me, because the Austrian department were just lovely. There were great people there, and I sort of got used to speaking German again as well. And I got some I worked in the editorial there. I did I had to translate at speed German scripts into English, because we called them then talks. The talks which went out had to be sent in English to the Foreign Office. And so I had to do a lot of translation work. And also I became secretary to two actors. One was Martin Miller, and the other was Eric Pohlmann. They worked in the Austrian section, and they acted on the London stage, actually. They were lovely people. And then also I was able, well, I wrote some talks myself, which I was allowed to broadcast myself, and that is when I wrote to my Catholic friend in Frankfurt, and I said, you can hear me on the air on such and such a day, such and such a time, so tune in. And that is when she said she remembered what my father had said. She said she listened and tears were streaming down her face.
Well, what were these talks that you were?
Well, they were mostly on women's subjects and young people.
Well, would this have been British propaganda?
No. What was life like in England after the war, mainly? What happened to women's issues? What happened to young people's issues and so on?
But this was during the war, was it? You were doing this?
During the war I was in the newsroom, but that came...
Oh, I see,
That came...
Yes, what sort of news were you doing during the war?
Well, that was news of what was happening on different countries. I mean, fighting. That was the fighting.
It was the sort of bulletins, the war
news
bulletins.
News bulletins.
And these were going out in German, were they?
These were, but I did not broadcast news. I only broadcast when I had written something.
But the translation work...
But the translation work was done during the war.
Yes, would this have been sort of propaganda, or was it real news?
Oh, no, the talks that I translated, they were on almost any subjects.
Yes. Can you remember what they would have been?
I mean, they were economic, there were some of it were literary, there were, I can't remember, I just... Anything that came to hand, I had to translate at top speed.
And it went out to Germany and the German-speaking countries.
The talks, yes, but they had to be translated into English to be censored here in England.
Oh, yes, you said it had to go to the Foreign
Office. To the Foreign Office, yes.
Yes. Yes, one would imagine that they were very careful that exactly the right... sort of slang.
Oh, yes, there were not talks I had written myself. I was just translating what was handed to me.
I think it was interesting, though, wasn't it, Laura?
It was very interesting, and also at the time we had to type our translation straight into stencil. And stencil were these sort of waxed... and you couldn't cross out or anything. It had to be quick and to the point and correct. So, and it had to be done at speed.
I expect you were meeting interesting people there, as well as the actors.
Obviously there were very well-known journalists. And so, I mean, you were together all the time with intellectuals, really, and people who were well-known journalists.
And would there have been other German emigres, as it were, working there then?
One or two. Yeah, I'm talking now the Austrian section. There were Viennese writers and journalists and professional people, and they were all called in at the time during the war to broadcast, to write, for propaganda purposes. So that was a very good mix of people.
Would this have been in Bush House?
That was Bush House, yes.
Did you ever know Anatole Goldberg?
I remember the name. Goldberg.
Yes, he would have been in the More the Russians.
I was going to say
Russian. More the Russians.
Because I met my husband in the BBC, and my husband worked in the Bulgarian section. And that's how I know Goldberg, I remember now, yes.
Yes, because it would have all been mum,
And so it was a very interesting mix of people from all over Europe. And sort of we had a canteen where we could have our meals, which helped a great deal because of Russian time. And also, of course, we had to be on shift work. So we stayed overnight. And also we stayed, I'm supposing you finish at 11 at night and you have to start again at 3 in the morning. So they had this big basement there where you slept. And when you got entered there you had to give the time when you had to be woken again. So I remember there were little blue bulbs, that was the only light down there. And then at about 3 in the morning, somebody would touch you by the shoulder, and time to get up, and you sort of got out of your bunk and went to the canteen to have a coffee and get back to work. So it was, and also, of course, I had to travel then every day from Hadley Wood into town, and the nearest station to Bush House was Holborn. And Holborn, of course, is a very deep station, and people used to sleep there because of the bombing. And sort of when you got out of the train, you had to step over bodies to get out. And I remember one morning when I arrived, I walked down Kingsway, and just close by Bush House there had been a bomb, and there were two or three buses which had been blown to pieces. And I remember on the trees, so you had little bits of clothing hanging there, and it was a horrible feeling. And Hadley Wood, where I lived, they had many doodle bugs. They were falling all around there, and I had to learn to become a firefighter, I remember. I was kept very busy, and my friends who lived in Hadley Wood, they went to Derbyshire because John's family lived there, and by that time they had a little baby, and they wanted to make sure that they were safe there. And I was left all alone in the house. And I remember that was quite frightening, because at night time especially, I remember I slept under the stairs. Not slept, I sort of sat under the stairs, and I could hear the bombs falling all around. And being all by myself, it was quite difficult.
You must have experienced sort of the two phases of the Blitz, the early one when you came back from Betsy Coed, and then the V1s and the V2s.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
That's right.
What happened in Bush House when you had raids? Because
when there was an air raid, when the sirens went, you had to carry on with your work, because the broadcasts had to go out at a given time. And so you could creep under the table, sort of hoping, you know, but otherwise you just carried on. There's nothing else you could do. But you got used to it. You get used to anything.
Was it ever hit, Bush House?
Bush House itself was not hit. Broadcasting House was hit, but not Bush House.
Did you ever work in Broadcasting House?
No, no. Yeah. No.
That must have been a very interesting job and life, I would think, in the war, because you were right at the centre of news, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, exactly.
I mean,
you followed it, everything very closely, and you sort of were utterly relieved when you knew the Germans were being beaten, yes.
Did you ever have any dilemma, Laura, the fact that you were brought up, as you said earlier, you know, by the time you were born, that the Jewish people were Germans? So I wondered, did you ever sort of have any dissonance about the war, and that Germans were now your enemy?
No, the Germans, I don't think I ever looked upon the Germans as a nation, as being close to me. I mean, the only non-Jewish friends we had, they were Catholics, and they were all just part of my life, and sort of I didn't think in terms of I'm German. I don't think it had any great value for me at all.
And I wondered also, do you remember when news of the reality of the concentration camps and the death camps came through? Did you hear any of that while you were in the BBC?
Well, no, it was. It wasn't really well known then at that time. It was mainly what was going on in Italy, in Russia too. Russia became very important. The fight, the battles in Russia, that figured very, very highly. So that you followed the war scene much more than anything else. And I mean, famous people came. General de Gaulle came there, and I remember one day I was a bit late, and I rushed to the lift, and it was just about to close, and I squeezed in, and I saw some decorated people there, and they were all looking at me sort of rather aghast. How did you dare come in here? And it was the king of Sweden, or can't remember which king it was, with his entourage. And you know, you never knew you were going to crash into.
Yes, I suppose a lot of famous people came in and broadcast.
They broadcast, yes. And I remember General de Gaulle. I mean, he's such a tall man, wasn't he?
Yes, how about Winston Churchill? Did he ever come to Bush?
No,
House?
He didn't come to Bush.
He would have done it in the cabinet war room.
Oh yeah, I mean that wasn't his place, was it? It was all the foreigners were going in and out, and of course they had the Home Guard there, and the Home Guard must have been a very funny place, because they had people who were most unskilled, let's say, in anything but their intellectual lives, and to be told how to throw a grenade or anything, you know, hand grenade. I mean, that must have been an utter disaster. Yes.
Were you there when war ended, V-Day?
V-E-Day, I was there, yes. I was in in Stratford-on-Avon that day. And I remember all the flags coming out and, yes.
How did you feel on VE Day?
Oh!
I wonder what your feelings were.
I was delighted. I mean, that was the best possible end that I could have foreseen.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you wouldn't have known about your brother then, would you? On, you know, at that time, that your brother had died, had been murdered, rather.
Well, no, I didn't. I didn't know. But then, of course, after the war, you gradually got information, didn't you? And then, of course, the full horror of concentration camps and all the dreadful things that Auschwitz and all that. You got to know all that, and was obviously a terrible.
That must have been very difficult for you to cope with, I would imagine. You know, although you knew a lot about the reality of Hitler, and particularly, you know, your experience, yes, of Kristallnacht, but to actually come to terms with...
Yes.
I imagine a lot of your family had disappeared, had they, in the Holocaust?
Well, I mean, my grandparents. And as I told you, this friend, after the war, would write to me and give you full details of what existence had been like there, and how my grandfather died, I think, a few weeks after he arrived there. He was already well over 80. And my grandmother evidently held on, but people had constant diarrhea and so on, and so at her age she didn't survive for very long, but all her thoughts evidently at the time were for my brother and me, and how she hoped to survive and to be able to see us again.
End of Reel 3, Laura Confino.